Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder, and on the line with us is Rich Lankoff, who does a whole bunch of great work here at WGN, and also we consider you, Rich, to be our legal counsel. Is that okay that we consider you to be that?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I never get in legal trouble, but if I do, I know who to call.
Yep, you're on our speed dial.
I'm your guy.
You're on our speed dial. There's several stories in the news that have kind of a legal bend to them, so we were wondering, Rich, if you could spend some time with them. Number one, are these allegations being made towards actor and comedian Jim Carrey? Let's go through that story a little bit.
Yeah, Jim Carrey was just hit with a wrongful death lawsuit resulting from his girlfriend having killed herself back in September of 2015. His girlfriend's husband, try to follow the sequence here, but his girlfriend's husband filed suit on Monday in L.A., alleging that Jim Carrey gave this woman Ambien, Percocet, a bunch of prescription drugs that ultimately led to her committing suicide.
So what sort of precedent is there in a case like this? How much blame do you put on the person who, if they could prove that he is the one that supplied these lethal drugs, what has happened in the past?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been several high-profile examples of this happening in the past, these kind of lawsuits. If you remember, you know, probably the most prominent one is John Belushi when he overdosed from a combination of heroin and cocaine. Kathy Smith, his girlfriend, was actually charged with murder.
Didn't she actually put the needle in him, though? Someone asking their boyfriend for prescription pain medications, if you're an adult and you say, honey, could you get me some things? That seems to be more of you've given permission for that to happen.
Yeah, a little different. And in fact, to your point, the allegation in this case against Jim Carrey is not that, you know, that he obviously gave her, supplied her the drugs, but more that he was negligent in knowing that her drugs combined with her depression. She had a history, according to the lawsuit, of depression. She had previously attempted to take her own life, according to the lawsuit. So the result of her taking prescription drugs was foreseeable. That's the key allegation in this case, that Jim Carrey or any reasonable person would have foreseen that giving her these drugs, given her prior history, would result in, you know, her trying to kill herself again.
I don't know if you'll know the answer to this, Rich, but years ago, Carol O'Connor's son died through a drug overdose, and Carol O'Connor spent a good long time trying to get the drug dealer somehow put in jail because of his son's death. His son's name was Hugh, and I don't know how that ended up. Do you remember? Because that almost fits the same.
Yeah, I remember vaguely the case. I don't remember the result. But, you know, you see a lot of the, you know, these cases often get a lot of attention. The Anna Nicole Smith, the former guest model who died from an overdose, there was, you know, some similar allegations there against her doctors. Of course, you know, Prince, Michael Jackson, those are all also cases yeah. where there's been allegations of criminal behavior leading to these people's deaths from overdoses. But, you know, they're hard cases to prove, obviously, in this Jim Carrey case. They would have to prove that he not only supplied her with these drugs, but that, you know, the most important question is supplying her with prescription drugs. By doing that, he knew or should have known that she would have taken her own life, which is, you know, kind of tough to prove.
Yeah, how do you know that?
Yeah, I mean, they're saying that, you know, he should have known it. Any reasonable person would have known that because of her history of depression and suicide attempts. But those are, you know, those are very hard cases to prove.
Here's an idea. If you know that someone you love is suffering from depression, try and get them some help instead of just, you know, being their pharmacist.
Yeah, and listen, of course, Jim Carrey, I agree with that, and Jim Carrey denies that any of this took place. You know, part of the allegations in the lawsuit is that he was violating California law by getting these drugs using an alias. He was apparently using, according to the complaint, using the name Arthur King, and he was getting drugs from a doctor who conspired with Jim Carrey to illegally prescribe them under this false name. Obviously, you know, that would violate California laws in most states. Again, Jim Carrey has come out this week and said that he categorically denies all of these accusations.
You know, another strange element to this, Rich, is there was a time, and I don't know if he had since changed his ways, but Jim Carrey was extremely anti-drug, and even though he has kind of a manic personality, he would go out of his way to explain that it was not drug-induced, that he was against the use of drugs. So I don't know that that changed over the years, but I know that there was a long time where that was his stance on drugs.
Yeah, I know he was dating, you know, Chicago's very own Jenny McCarthy for a long time, and I think she, you know, she had a son. I think she was anti-drug also, so maybe it came from there because her son had some issues. But that, you know, in this lawsuit, this husband, the ex-husband, you know, to that point, he says that this was contrary to Jim Carrey's public persona, that public persona of being a grieving good guy who was against drugs was a complete, you know, facade.
Hmm. All right, Rich Lankoff is our guest. There are other stories with legal twists that we will cover with him. If you have any comments or questions, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Rich Lankoff is our guest. You know him from Legal Face Off. Rich, there's other cases we want to cover with you. We don't have a whole lot of time, but Wendy and I were discussing JonBenet Ramsey's story. It's now been 20 years. The murder goes unsolved. Several television outlets have come up with programming about JonBenet Ramsey and the 20th anniversary. And then on CBS the other day, they had a bunch of experts decide that it was her brother Burke Ramsey that was most likely the murderer. He and his lawyers are announcing today that they plan on suing CBS for some sort of defamation of character, saying you can't go on network television and say I'm the murderer because I'm not. What do you make of all this?
Man, lots of stuff. So, yeah, his attorney, the family's attorney, has, as you said, threatened to sue, or said he will sue CBS for defamation. They have, the family, in fact, has used the same attorney to sue various outlets. I think there was about 8 or 9 outlets over the last 20 years that they've sued for defamation. You know, the bigger picture is whether this new CBS special has made a case that Burke Ramsey is the killer. You know, I've watched part of it. I haven't gone all the way through, but from what I've seen, it's really questionable. You know, I think that a lot of the conclusions that these experts come up with are really not based in, you know, much foundation. I'll give you one quick example. You know, they talk about the, well, first of all, the audio portion of the 911 tape. They make a huge deal out of the fact that in the background, when Patty Ramsey, you know, when she called 911 at 5 a.m. the morning after Christmas, when she discovers that her daughter is missing, the documentary puts forth a theory that the 911 operator kept talking, and Patsy Ramsey did not know that the phone was hung up. And on the tape, you could hear, they say, at least 2 people, maybe 3 people talking in the background. And on the show, on the CBS show, they make a big deal out of, you know, the sound engineer making the audio clearer, and they come up with what they think is clear statements. They say that Burke, for example, said, what did you do, or something like that, that Patsy Ramsey says, oh, Jesus. Basically, they're saying that what you could hear on this 911 call when Patsy Ramsey thought she hung up
incriminated them in some way.
Examples of them, you know, incriminating themselves. And I don't know. Listen, I heard it. These are all things that had been gone over for years and years. You can't tell from that audio what they're saying. I mean, and you know, what I think is tough about the documentary or about the special is that the 2 investigators are listening to it, and they seem surprised by what they hear. In fact, you know, this has all been in the public record for years and years. There was a book. The most, you know, prominent book was Larry Schiller wrote a 1999 book called Perfect Murder, Perfect Town, where the National Enquirer had leaked the transcript of a company that had analyzed that tape. So exactly what CBS is saying now for the first time, as if these investigators are hearing it for the first time, that's all been in the public domain for years and years. So I thought that was a little disingenuous.
Does the network have the right? The show is presented as entertainment. And again, we said this earlier, it's sad because a little girl got killed, but that show falls under the bracket more of entertainment than news. If they're sensationalizing the whole thing and having a panel of experts tell you who they think the murderer is, but they're not presenting it as though they were a jury. They're not condemning him. They're just saying, we've got these people, quote-unquote experts, saying he was the murderer. So does he have a valid case against CBS?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You're right. I mean, they're not saying that this is what happened. They're saying this is a theory. In order to prevail, Burke Ramsey would have to show that not only did they present things that are knowingly false, but also that he suffered some damage from it. The reason that you don't see many libel or slander cases successful by celebrities is that it's really a two-part test, both of which are very difficult to prove. You have to prove, if you're Burke Ramsey, that he suffered some actual financial loss from it.
All right.
We're never going to know. Although I keep telling Bill that I feel like something is going to surface somewhere someday. Someone's going to come across something, and we will find out what happened to poor JonBenet Ramsey.
Well, I mean, really the most interesting part wasn't even part of the special, but you know, recently it came out that a grand jury in Boulder did, after 18 months of investigating the alleged crime, came back with indictments against Patty and John Ramsey. I never knew that until recently. The DA, Alex Hunter, decided not to prosecute. He thought there wasn't enough, but I don't think many people knew that a grand jury actually concluded that there was enough evidence to indict both the parents. Now, it wasn't an indictment for murder or even manslaughter. It was a lesser charge of basically child neglect, but there was indictments handed down by a grand jury.
Rich, the ending that they came up with over on CBS was that Burke was the killer, but that it wasn't intentional. There was some sort of an accident that took place and then a cover-up after that accident. If you're an attorney for the Ramsey family, or even if you are the Ramsey family, wouldn't it have made a lot more sense to be honest and say this was an accident? It was a 9-year-old boy who didn't have the full faculty to understand exactly what was going on. Wouldn't that have been the better play?
Well, I mean, listen, if you follow that line of logic and assume that that's what happened, that this was over a piece of pineapple that JonBenet, you know, stole from Burke Ramsey. That's the basis for this whole story, according to CBS, that because she was found with a piece of pineapple in her stomach, the theory was that he was upset that she took his pineapple and he hit her over the head with a flashlight. So if you follow that and that's true, would it have been better for the family to just come out and admit it? Sure. You know, I guess that's one theory in hindsight. But if that did happen, you would understand, I guess, how the family would think, I don't want to ruin this 9-year-old boy's life, and let's come up with this alternative theory. I mean,
like, that wouldn't ruin his life, living a lie for the rest of his natural born days.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think any right-minded person, if that did happen, they would tell the truth, and they wouldn't come up with this elaborate 3-page ransom note, and they wouldn't cover things up for years and years, because I agree with you, subjecting your living child to that would be terrible. But, you know, people do stupid things all the time when they commit crimes.
And would he have been arrested? Someone had texted us, and I don't know how true this is, that you have to be 10 years old to be committed of a murder. But if, you know, siblings fight, you hit your sister over the head with a flashlight, unless you're repeatedly beating her with it, doesn't that go down as an accident? Like, there was no intent. You hit your sister and, oh my God, she died.
Yeah, so it depends on the state. You know, different states have different ages by which you could be tried as an adult. We saw this in Wisconsin in the Slenderman trial recently.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, to be convicted of first-degree murder, you would have to show some sort of premeditation that probably wouldn't exist in a crime where you're, you know, hitting someone over the head, reacting to something they did on the spur of the moment. Although, you know, remember, you can prove premeditation. Premeditation doesn't mean that you have to sit there planning something for months. Premeditation can be formed in a matter of seconds. Whether the Boulder, you know, district attorney would have enough in this case to prove first-degree murder, probably a tough case.
And there's one final text here before we let you go from 312. I'd like to ask Rich Lankoff if Matt Bubala, a fine and sensitive human being who is the reason Kevin Richter is getting married, can sue said Kevin for not him inviting him to his wedding.
I wonder who that's from.
You can't sue someone for not inviting you to a wedding, can you?
I mean, I'm first in line. I want to get to that as much as anyone. More importantly, I want to get to the honeymoon. The honeymoon sounds like it's going to be pretty good spot.
Sure.
Maybe you should go and, you know, make sure legally he's taken care of there.
Rich, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Always good talking to you.
Thanks, Rich Lankoff. Legal Face-Off is the podcast at WGN+. does a nice job. We'll take a quick break and then news. And then Kevin, who is getting married on Friday, his future wife will be here and her father will be here. And we will quiz them on exactly how much they know or don't know about Kevin. We hope the wedding will still take place on Friday. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.